Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey friends, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. My name is Ben Hardman. I'm here this morning in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm joined by Ben Sternke.
Hey guys.
Hey Ben.
I'm not in Atlanta. Today? I mean, just to be I'm in a different city. I'm in Indianapolis.
It's amazing what technology can do, buddy.
It's incredible. We're talking.
We can talk to each other.
Internet.
So. We're talking. Yep. We're talking. And we're also joined by my good friend, Chris Moorman. Chris is the pastor of Grace Capital City in Washington, D.C. He works with me in the Grace family of churches. He's an Australian. He is an NBA lover. He's one of my favorite friends to speak about the NBA. He's one of the three pastors in the world who hasn't sold out to be a Golden State Warriors fan, who's actually stuck with his team.
Oh,
we're glad you're here.
What's your team, Chris?
Well, sometimes I think my team is opposing Golden State.
That's
my team.
Whoever's playing Golden State.
Yeah, I'm like the antithesis of a bandwagon person. Like I just run the other way.
I
lived in Atlanta for 7 years. I was a Hawks fan, but I think I'm really drifting over to the Wizards now. They got some good point guards and good team. They just picked up Dwight Howard, you know, he can still bowl a little bit.
No one will fault you for not being a Hawks fan right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm just switching from one mediocre team to another mediocre team.
No, the Hawks are beyond mediocre now. They are giving away tickets to whoever wants them.
That's sad, isn't it?
Begging people to come to games.
When I was a Hawks fan, they were mediocre.
Yeah.
Firmly lodged in the middle. Now they're near the bottom. The Wizards are a pretty good, solid, mediocre team, though, in the NBA, I think.
Yeah.
So, hey, happy to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah. Hey, today we want to spend some time talking about discipling millennials. And I recognize all the challenges in just even naming that. I feel a little uncomfortable even saying that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Because like the last thing millennials want is to be named and put in a category. And the last thing we want to do is do that to like a people group or like you're defined by the year you were born or all of those kinds of things. It's all a little weird, right, Ben?
Right. And there's a lot of millennials that actually listen to the podcast. So they're like, oh, you're going to figure out how to disciple me, huh? So.
You're going to talk about me today.
Yeah.
You're going to put me in a box.
Right.
But what we have been recognizing is it does feel like there is a challenge for some of the older guys like us. Am I allowed to say that?
I think so. Gen X. We kind of feel
I think
old.
I think I'm the oldest, right? Are you older than me, Sturkey?
I'm 43.
So am I, buddy.
Okay, but you turned 43 in May.
December 30th.
You turned 44 this year. Okay.
I turned 44.
Yeah,
this
I was
year,
born so in I'm 75. Old. So you're oldest. You're the oldest on the
That's
call.
That's what I thought. So old guys like me are trying to figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
And we do hear a lot from leaders about how do I disciple my young people and how do we make disciples when it does feel like there's a bit of a generational gap. So, Chris, you're leading a really young church in Washington, D.C. I'd love to just hear a little bit about your context, a little bit about how you got there, and then I'd love to dive into talking about, you know, how do we make disciples of younger folks?
Yeah, sure. So, we're Grace Capital City, Washington, D.C. We planted our church 2 years ago, so we're a little over 2 years old, and we're kind of right in the heart of D.C. We wanted to plant near some of the big universities. I have a bit of a background in college ministry in Atlanta, and so I have a real passion for reaching students. And when we got to D.C., we did end up planting near some of the universities, and we have a good amount of students, but what we learned is that DC is run by millennials. And it's kind of an interesting thing to say, because you don't see them necessarily. They're not the ones on C-SPAN or CNN, or, you know, they're not in the power positions, but they're doing pretty much everything else. So millennials, for the most part, are flocking to DC because they have a vision to be involved in something. They want to work on the Hill. They want to work in the nonprofit sector, coming from all over the country, really all over the world. And they're earning minimal money, sleeping five to a room. DC is a crazy expensive city, but most people probably know that. And they're like the engine of the city. They're the ones actually doing the work, getting stuff done. And so, you know, in ministering in that context, what we began to realize is that, yeah, there is an opportunity to reach students, but it really was millennials that were kind of presenting the biggest opportunity. And so I would say, you know, our church is probably 80% ages 18 to 30. I think that, and that might even be 90%, you know, but it's a really young church. So we have a lot of people. It's very transient. A lot of people in that kind of age bracket coming into DC for a year or 2 years or 3 years at the most. And they're doing their, what they call their DC time. You know, I'm building up my resume. I'm working on the Hill. I'm doing what I need to do. And then I'm moving back to my real life, which we challenge that idea of real life a lot. But yeah, so that's kind of the context where we're at. It's a fun city. It's everyone works way too hard. But there's a lot of energy, and it's a really inspiring place to be. I love DC. I've really grown to, it's kind of gotten under my skin in a way, which is fun.
Yeah, that for me anyway, it brings up one of the questions that I actually get a lot from people is they'll talk about their context, and they talk about that word transient. And so sometimes it's a college context. They're like, I've only got people for 3 years, basically, you know, or 4 years max. They wonder about the possibilities, I guess, of discipleship in the way of Jesus. You know, if Jesus had these guys that literally followed him around for 3 years, right? And he had sort of almost full access to their lives. Like, how do we do discipleship in such a transient culture where you've only got people for a certain amount of time? And like you said, in DC, they're working like crazy. So, you know, how often do they show up to church? Maybe once or twice a month, you know, like, how do you get them into small groups when they got to drive across the city to get to a house and everybody's house is too small? Like, I don't know, like that feels like it would be a challenging environment if what you've heard about discipleship is you need lots of time with people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. I think there's a mindset shift that needed to happen in me, where I began to realize and try to value the time we have instead of kind of pining for more time, if that makes sense.
Totally.
As a church planner, it's like, it can be frustrating because you feel like you're like gaining ground, building the church, doing all these things we're supposed to do. And then it's like, oh yeah, 30% of my congregation just left, you know. Start again. Your best leaders are moving on all the time. But then from a real kingdom perspective, it presents incredible opportunities as well, right? It's getting to disciple people that are involved in really inspiring areas of government and work and city. So I think we've had to be creative when it comes to the timeline thing and working within people's schedules. We do a lot of our discipleship right now at 6:30 in the morning, and that's just because we learned that DC is a morning city. It's like people don't want to stay out late, but they will get up early for the most part. So that's part of it. And then trying to maximize the time you have them, you know. So, I mean, we're trying to create vehicles and structures that are easy for people to come in, even if they're only here for a year. So sometimes that means you have to sacrifice a little bit of the kind of organic, ideal flavor of discipleship, where it's like, man, I would love this just to be life on life. We're just doing stuff together and eating meals together. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but I'm only here for a year and I don't really even have time to build that relationship. Is there something I can just kind of, is there like a train that's moving I can jump in on for a while? And there's part of my flesh that like, is like, oh, it feels too programmatic. It feels too structured. But I think in a city like this, you actually need a bit of that. People need a sense of like, I can be here. It's going to be valuable. You know, I am going to grow. And so creating those structures, I think, has been life-giving overall to a church in our kind of environment.
Yeah. Like the threat there or the temptation is that the ideal, right, would cancel out any opportunity to do something because you're pining for, man, I wish I had more time. You know, that kind of thing. I'm reminded of, I heard Dallas Willard one time talk about, he was talking with, I can't remember what the context was, but talking with some leaders and basically just said, you know, I know a lot of pastors who get frustrated about the people who aren't in the room and they miss the opportunity, you know, who's gone or who's, you know, that's what they notice when they get up to preach or whatever. And he said, and they miss the opportunity that there are people in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, talk to them. Talk to the people in the room. Don't talk to the people or be frustrated about the ones who aren't in the room. I remember that, like, it changed my perspective so much. I hear a little of that in what you're saying. Like, this is the way this city is. I can't change it. We can't go back to an agrarian economy or something. Like, so how do we work with reality as we have it here?
Yeah, I think one of the big things I'll say at church a lot is just this idea that it's worth it, because that's one of the lies of the city is I'm only here for this amount of time, so it's not worth it. There's nothing to be gained. And even this real life idea, my real life starts when, you know, I mean, you guys, we encounter that in every context, but there's a lot of that, you know, I'll get serious about my faith or I'll start taking steps to grow and be formed when my real life starts. Like, this is it. This is your real life. Whether you're here for 6 months or whether you're here for 6 years, like, God has something for you right now. And we've actually, the people that are hungry for it and that are willing to dive in with everything, in my experience, they really do. They get a lot out of it. You know, it's like you will receive back what you're willing to put in. So, but you have to keep challenging that. This is worth it.
Yeah.
There's a continual invitation to keep jumping in and keep being a part of it. Yeah. Chris, I wonder we were just talking kind of prior to this about we've got a residency program at Grace where we invite a bunch of young people in, and we just brought in kind of a new crop of leaders that we're investing in throughout the year. And we were just sharing stories of interviews and those types of things where there was some interesting kind of millennial moments. I kind of stopped my interviews a couple different times just to help people, just to kind of be like, hey, maybe don't say that in an interview, or maybe don't, maybe coaching them. Maybe the first text you send me shouldn't be a meme or those kinds of things.
Save that for text number, you know, 5 or 6. Like,
at least 5 or 6. so what are some of the challenges that you face just in kind of leading millennials and walking beside them?
What are
some of the ways in which you kind of challenge and invite?
Yeah, no, that's good. And it's like anything, right? Every challenge has an opportunity. So it's always like two sides to the coin. Like with millennials, there's challenge and there's opportunity. So I think in my mind, it's always helpful to try and look at both. So I mean, there's a bunch of things I could say. Like, I had this, someone say this to me once, and I thought this was really profound. It's actually a friend of mine from Australia. She said, you know, so the church always wants to talk about what's true, but the culture is searching for what's beautiful. Hmm. And I thought, wow, that is a really interesting insight. Now, from a church perspective, we're like, well, we got to be careful because we don't want to lose what's true, which is absolutely true, right? That's right. We don't want to lose what's true. Sure. But when we forget that we live in a world where millennials especially are looking for what is beautiful. So you think about this kind of return back to conversations around social justice and racial reconciliation and oppression, all these things that are so central to the kingdom of God. These are beautiful parts of the kingdom of God, beautiful parts of our discipleship, beautiful stories that Jesus was the one who's lifted the oppressed, that spoke a better word, right? And what I've learned is that while sometimes in kind of a postmodern kind of perspective, it can be hard to give, like, people have a hard time with what's true. If you can frame it in a better narrative, a better story of what is beautiful, then people are actually more ready to receive what is true. So to me, that's always been a challenge and an opportunity in how I teach and try to frame the journey, the story, the big picture of what God's doing on the earth, you know? Mm. I think, this is one of the classic stereotypes, but I think there's some truth in it as well. And maybe this even plays into kind of what I said before, but this idea of options. I've heard millennials described as the options generation. Right. It's like, I need options. I need to know what's available to me. That's challenging. Mm. And so if part of our discipleship can look like learning to teach people to make decisions and to own them, mm. and to follow through, you know, that there's beauty in walking with a community, even when it's totally unsexy and the thrill of the honeymoon has worn off and mm. real life, like we have to frame things in the, you know, it may not feel as exciting as it did, but this is not how we actually grow, right? We're not just looking for options. We're actually looking for growth and transformation. Mm. So I think that's been a big one. One of the big things I've learned about millennials when it comes to church and trying to get them involved in community and things like that is that millennials are deeply suspicious in general. And of course, we're just generalizing here, but right. millennials in general are deeply suspicious of overt strategy and highly intuitive of culture.
Yes, and they have an amazing BS meter.
Oh, it's off the charts. I was just about to say the same thing. It's off the charts. It's like they can sniff a fake better than anyone. They're like looking for it. So if something feels too like, man, I don't know, I feel like I'm being played here, they're out. You know, they're looking for the real thing.
Yep.
And what I've found is it's actually not about form and style. So I know some churches are like, well, that means we need to go right back to these things. Like, well, maybe. But there can be authenticity in a multiple variety of forms and structures. Yeah. What they're really looking for is, do I trust these people?
Yeah.
And what do I mean, when I say culture, I know there's a lot of ways we could define that, but they just have this intuition. It's like, I can sniff it. What do I feel when I walk in the room? Does it feel real? Does it feel authentic? So focusing on that in leadership and being more selective about like how we bring out our strategic goals and our mission statements and weaving that into more of a narrative versus like, here's how we're going to conquer the world. You know, I think millennials are kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
They get suspicious of that, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we all should be a little more suspicious of we're going to conquer the world.
Right. Right. Maybe there's something for us to learn there, right?
Maybe. I tried that week one. It didn't go over well.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Grace Capital City mission statement, we're going to conquer the world.
Yeah.
What's up now?
Taking the city for Jesus. Anyway.
Well, actually.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, I hear you. That kind of language doesn't resonate. And I think part of the thing I like about this conversation is it's not just a pragmatic issue. These millennials, they're so weird. How do we, minister to them, or how do we adapt, you know, to them? But there's actually a prophetic in a lot of what we're hearing from the younger generation. I think there's a prophetic critique of the ways that we've misused power.
Yeah.
And that's inherent in that's why their BS meter is so high, is just they've been fed BS for so long that they're like, mm-hmm. no more of this, right? And that's a prophetic critique to those of us who are like, I could take a little more, you know, like, or I could give a little more, I could, you know, like, so I think there's a prophetic critique in there too, that where we're like, we have something to learn from the way that this younger generation sees the world.
Yes.
You know, there's something there for us.
I think so. Yeah.
I'm reminded, you know, when you talked about beauty, they were looking for beauty. I'm reminded of N.T. Wright's book, Simply Christian. And he writes a book every other week, so it's hard to keep track of them all. But
don't
this we was,
all.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like all of us pastors. Yeah. I remember the first section of that book. It's kind of a modern day apologetic for faith. And if you're interested in, like, I think a modern day apologetic for the Christian faith that I think actually works for millennials, because I think our apologetics are mostly like, how do you know what's true? Or how can we know that the Bible is real? You know, like, how, and we go about trying to prove that. And that to me feels like this younger generation, like they don't even ask that question. They're not, they don't even care. Like, why would I care if the Bible's true? You know, like that's the wrong starting point. But N.T. Wright in this book, he starts with basically like these universal human longings that we all have. And he names them as, how does he name them? He names them as justice. Like we long for justice, like that things would be made right, right? That things would be fair. Like people long for justice. You mentioned that a little bit, that I think the younger generation does. We long for some sort of transcendence or spirituality. We long for some sort of connection to the divine or some spiritual connection that goes beyond just, you know, the fact that we're physical like the animals. We long for community. We're longing for some sort of, you know, some sort of community where we can belong, right? A meaningful belonging and community. And the fourth thing he talks about is beauty, where he says we're all longing for beauty. And then the rest of the book basically says, here's how Christianity answers those longings. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I heard a little bit of that, you know, in what you were talking about of saying like, it's not that we're sacrificing truth. We're just realizing that beauty can tell us the truth too.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Which makes, you know, narrative and art and things like that so much more important, yeah. Doesn't it?
Right. Right. It's not just an addendum. It's not just pretty coloring for the windows so that the young people want to come in, right? Mm-hmm. No, it tells us the truth in a way that like didactic propositional statements can't.
Yeah.
It tells us a truth that we can't hear in any other way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, kind of what plays into this conversation too is we've spent some time on the podcast talking a little bit about how do we disciple people who aren't like us. So
right.
How do I as an apostle prophet, you know, disciple a pastor, teacher, or shepherd, you know, what does that look like? The same thing is true when we get into generational kind of discipleship. I see people that are really confused about how do I step into kind of a spiritual father role with somebody that's older than me, or how do I operate as like an older brother, or, you know, kind of how do I operate in those spaces? Chris, do you have any stories from your community of just how some folks in your community have loved well and kind of discipled well, invited kind of some of the millennials or younger folks in your community into their life well?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really good. I think one thing I've been learning, and this is a challenge for us as a church, is that millennials, at least in my experience, they're not looking for a millennial church. Mm-hmm. But they are drawn to it. So it's kind of like this, the best and worst. So they come to it because it's like, oh, there's people like me. I can find community with people who are same stage. So we keep having more and more come. But then they get there and they don't want it to just be millennials. They want a wider demographic. They want a fuller representation of the kingdom of God. And so we have a handful of families. We're praying for more. But it's like what I think our families represent to them is it's almost like an anchoring point in the midst of the turmoil of their lives a lot of times. So like everyone, millennials are, you know, they're in the church and they're feeling the conviction and growth of Jesus and the work of the Holy Spirit in their lives, but then they're going to happy hour and sometimes their lives are crossing boundaries that they feel then a conviction. You know what I mean? They're just living in the to and fro that everyone does. Working really hard, feeling a lot of pressure to make money, pressure to advance their careers, pressure to find a spouse at some stage, all these kind of things. And what we've found, I think, for me and Jessica is, this is my wife, this is Jessica, we've found that our presence can offer some of that grounding, can offer some of that anchoring. Yeah. And while it doesn't mean we can have people over for dinner 7 nights a week, you know, it does mean we can be intentional in our conversations and intentional about the perspective on life that we can offer people, because it's a very in the moment, what I'm doing right now, the thing I'm facing right now is everything. and it's earth shattering. And sometimes you just need someone with even just 10 years more experience to sit down and say, hey, this is okay. Let's go a little slower. You're still going to be here tomorrow and you're still going to be here a week after that. And we can keep working through this, you know? So I think that's been really valuable. We have some incredible families. And I say what one of the reasons we're praying for more is because we have so many millennials that are just looking to them and saying, hey, can I just come and be in your space? Can I babysit for you? I mean, we do not have a hard time finding sitters. That's an incredible gift. They really want to be around.
We need to do a second podcast on that. Like, how do you create a situation where you don't need babysitters?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Awesome.
I can ship some of them over to Atlanta and Indianapolis, if that's helpful.
Excellent.
Send them to our house.
Excellent.
We have a long list of sitters. And that's not just true of us. That's true of all the families that have young kids at our church. And I think part of it is, yes, they want to serve. They want to help, but they want to be around. They want to be in our house and feel a sense of stability.
Yeah.
And that everything's okay. And sometimes we've found the best nurture of them is just come and be in my house for a few hours.
Yeah.
Be with my 3-year-old son. He'll give you some perspective because he does not care about what's going on the hill right now. Trust me.
Right.
It's all about trucks and Spider-Man for him. I mean, we hear that story all the time. We have just a handful of people that I would say are even in the next stage up from where we're all at, you know, that they're past the young kids stage. They're kind of into that almost empty nest kind of stage. And for them, I mean, they are just looked to as like the sages of the faith, you know, please can I be around you? So there really is a beautiful opportunity for that cross-generational ministry. And we start to see how one generation can really bless the next. And at the same time, I think millennials bring such a vision and a passion. They really do have a sense that anything's possible. And I need that.
Yeah.
We all need that. You know?
Yeah, totally. That for me, that brings up another question. You know, one of the axioms that we talk about in our coaching is that whatever God does through you, he's also going to do in you. Mm-hmm. And that just speaks to the coherence and the integration of our spiritual life, right? That leadership isn't something that I'm doing to people. It's not a technique I perform on people. It's a person I am among people.
It's not a way to control.
Right. It's not a way to control others or get a result necessarily. It's a way of being with people. And so whatever God is doing through me, he's also doing in me. And the situation of leadership that I have is always going to be the location of my own spiritual growth, you know, and formation. So I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit. Like, what has being in DC and pastoring a church that's 80% 30 and younger, you know, 18 to 30, these young adults, these millennials. Like, how has that affected your spiritual formation? Like, what have you had to learn and grow into yourself rather than just like, what new leadership posture do I need to take toward others? But like, what has God done in you since you've been in this situation of pastoring this church?
No, that's great. That's a great question. And the thing that comes to mind isn't just uniquely for millennials, although in my context, it's certainly part of it. But I think it is pretty highlighted in a city like DC. The first thing that really comes to mind is kind of what I said before. I think it's the gift of perspective and consistency and even slowness, maybe. And I say that, and there's not much about church planting that's slow. I'm an apostle pastor, so I like to move fast and get things moving fast and all that. But in a highly polarized environment, so I mean, just to give you perspective, we've got people in our church that are reporters for CNN, and we have people that work for the Trump administration. So you know, I mean, on the surface, they should be
right. Do enemies, fights break out? Right? Do fights break
out? Yeah, and we got people that work for Democrats. We got people that work for Republicans. You know, a pretty broad cross section, and we're constantly forced into tribalism, polarization. Yeah. We're told that the other side is the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just found myself here even more so than previous ministry opportunities and places. I've found I'm slower on what I speak and what I post, and trying to help people find the good and the truth in each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think especially when you're young, you get into a real environment like that and you're straight away told, okay, you demonize the other side, pushed into your corner. We fight for our corner. And so we, a phrase we'll use a lot at our church is we major on the politics of Jesus here.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We leave our earthly politics at the door. We talk about the politics of Jesus, and the politics of Jesus will critique the left and it will critique the right. You know, it'll draw out, all our tribalism, and that's what Jesus did again and again, you know. So I find that if I'm talking to someone and they're having a real issue with you know, something I've said, or maybe something someone else in our community has said, it's an opportunity for me to help them to see that God is way bigger than our earthly politics. And I think even the gift of age, I mean, we've all been around men and women who are in their 80s or even their 90s, and the way they see life, it's like they're just looking at it from a bird's eye view sometimes. They're like, I see it so much more broadly. Whereas the younger we are, I think we see the trees a little bit more than the forest, you know? Yeah. So I feel like that's been something I've tried to learn a lot, and something I'm still learning. I still say things sometimes and I'm like, whoa, okay, I could have said that a lot better.
Yeah.
And I realize I've offended people, and not that offense. There needs to be offense at certain times, but it needs to be the right kind of offense, and it needs to be passed in the right way.
Yes.
So yeah, I think that I think I'm learning the gift of taking a step back and helping my people, helping the congregation together see, like, hey, we can hold these things in tension, and we can, as say if you're someone who identifies as more of a liberal minded person, you can learn from conservatives. There's much to be learned here.
Yeah.
I always say that Jesus, his harshest rebukes were never for those who got it wrong. They were always for those who thought they got it right.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was never harshest on the one that made a total mistake and blew it all. He was harshest with the ones for the Pharisees and, you know, the teachers of the law, you know.
The people who refused to sort of tell the truth about themselves or own up to what was really going on.
What was actually happening. Yeah. And Jesus carried such a non-anxious presence all the time. And it's not always the presence that I feel in my heart. You know, there are moments where I feel anxious about the polarization and all the things that are going on. And I don't know if I'm like, we coach a lot of pastors, and I don't know if we meet a lot of pastors who I sense a really strong non-anxious presence in. And so I think there's real power in that, Chris, of us being able to step back, to slow down, to gain perspective of the kingdom, to see the things that are unseen as well as the things that are seen. You know, sometimes we focus so much on the seen things that we can't see any of the unseen things. And so we don't have any kingdom perspective in any way. So this has been a great conversation, Chris. Appreciate you, man. Love you. Love what you're doing in DC. And are continuing to pray for the work that you're doing there. Friends, thanks for being with us with the Gravity Podcast today. We love you. We appreciate you. We would love for you to check out what we're doing in coaching, and check out our website, gravityleadership.com, if you want some more information about who we are and what we're doing and what's going on in the Gravity Leadership world. Ben, anything else we need to say? Anything important?
I don't think so. Well, there's a lot more we could say, but right now that's probably good enough for now.
So it's good enough for now. We're non-anxious presence on non-anxious, what we didn't say.
That's right. It's no big deal. What we did
say. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been an honor.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Good to hear. You're the second Australian we've had on the podcast.
Keep them coming.
Yeah.
Keep them coming.
Yeah. I enjoy listening to you speak.
So. There's a song written in the 80s called The Great South Land of the Holy Spirit, and I'm claiming that.
Oh, nice. Nice. Is it a Christian song? Must be.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, look it up. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
It was also in Lord of the Rings. It was in Lord of the Rings also.
Whoa. That's a different Southland.
Yeah. Yeah, now you're messing with some local rivalries there, right?
Yes.
Some down under rivalries. All right. All right, guys. We'll catch you next time. Peace.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you. So please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.